Welcome to Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here, and we're joined by a special guest today, Clinton McDonald. Clinton, thanks for being with us.
Thank you all for having me.
Yeah, we don't get guests during the offseason.
Yeah, this is
a special show for
us. Building's normally empty, and so we're excited.
Although I didn't know I was supposed to wear a jacket.
Yep, look at Clinton setting the standards high here on the show.
I didn't want you guys to upstage me.
I like it. All right, so for you, free agency is right now. The combine was last week. I feel like all these players, they think that, you know, with combine and all this, it has to go a certain way for their career to work out. And I know you are one of those stories that proves otherwise.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
For the guys who combine may not have gone as well, or they didn't get invited particular, people don't know your story. Tell them a little bit about your unconventional entrance to the league.
Well, I didn't get invited to the combine, and I started training out in Arizona when I was coming out. And the whole hope was, you know, I was going to get an invite. I was going to go to combine, show my stuff, run my 40, lift my weights, and jump my jumps. You know, but things didn't happen like that. But they, a roundabout way, I made it here. This is going to my ninth season in the NFL. I was on a practice squad for my first year. I was a seventh-round draft pick for the Cincinnati Bengals. And, you know, a lot of guys put a lot of investment so far as in this, what we call sweat equity. And what they do, they work hard. They go to these training facilities. You know, I work out over at the compound from time to time, and a lot of guys are at the compound working out, saying, you know, this is going to be my future. This is what I'm going to invest in so I can get a good return from it. And like you say, the beginning of their career might not be so great so far as their testing ability or even their athletic ability or their playing ability. But the thing about the National Football League, all you have to do is work hard in a sense. You have to have a little bit of talent. You have a little bit of knowledge. But if you work hard, coaches like that, and they're attracted to that.
In addition to 9 years, you have a Super Bowl ring.
Yes, sir, I do.
So you've been all the way. You've made it all the way to the top, despite where you.
Well, yes, sir. Despite where I started out, you know, it seemed fit that I won a Super Bowl ring and try to bring that culture here to Tampa and try to aid and, you know, wins around here as well. So it's been exciting.
And you're definitely one of those free agents that when we've brought in, I mean, had such a huge impact on what this team has been and such a consistent vocal leader and also leader on the field. So thinking about the time as a free agency and as free agency approaches, what are some of the things that as a free agent coming in are the challenges of adapting to a new team and some of the ways that we see free agency work really well for some players and teams and be complete busts in other situations? What is it about that works and doesn't?
You know, I think it's more so the players themselves. You know, every player that is considered in free agency, especially high picks or low picks, you know, they have some kind of talent about themselves, doing what they do to actually get noticed for what they're doing. You know, a lot of guys, they put a lot of pressure on themselves as well as, you know, family members, friends, you know, to say, you're going to get this, you're going to get that. And nobody really knows, you know, it's a conversation between the teams and the agents. So as a player, you're kind of sitting back thinking, you know, well, I don't know. I hope to get this. I hope to get that. But at the same time, it's hectic because you don't know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it doesn't have to be that hectic because you have no control over it anyway. But knowing you don't have any control and then your agent calls you, well, this team likes you, and we're going to try to get this, that, and the third, and you're like, wow. And it kind of humbles you in a sense. You're like, I didn't know it took so much effort into going out here in free agency, but, I mean, it does.
Free agency actually starts tomorrow at 4
yes,
o'clock,
sir.
But right now we're in that, a lot of people like to call it legal tampering window, or you know, a chance to negotiate. I think that started in 2013, so it would have been in place when you signed here. Do you have a recollection of what that was like, and do you think that was a good addition to the whole process?
I think it was a good addition to the process so far as creating a rule that regulates every team in the league, saying, you know what, this is when it officially starts. Kind of gives an even playing field in a sense to the teams as well as the agents. But, you know, some deals do get done up front and before free agency actually starts. I think it, in a sense, is nothing too wrong with that because if you know who you like, you're going to go after who you like and you're going to target your guys. But at the same time, you know, this is a battle between the agents and the teams. And, you know, may the best men or, you know, women win.
Speaking of free agency, one of your teammates avoided it, William Golston, with that five-year deal signed on Monday. I assume that you're happy to have heard about that. Can you just talk about what he brings to the team and if you are happy that he's coming back?
You know what? I'm ecstatic that Will's coming back because he brings a lot of intangibles other than his athletic ability and his physical strength. You know, Will's the type of guy who's going to keep a light mold during the week when we're practicing, when we're hanging out. He's always light, not too playful, but, you know, doesn't want to make things too serious until game day. And when game day, you'll see this gentleman, 6'7", 285, face black on his face paint on his face, blacked out, and he's focused, laser light focused, and he's going out there. He's trying to hurt guys, not intentionally, but you know the position he plays, a defensive end, and you know being a stouter guy, you know he has to be the imposer of the will, you know. So he has to go out there and fight, and he has to go out there and put it all out there. And Will does a great job. That's why the Buccaneers signed him back.
I know he's known as one of the better run-stopping defensive ends in the league, but he was talking after he signed about it. It's actually his goal to become an elite pass rusher, and you can develop that over the years, right?
Yes, sir, you can develop that. You know, most situations that Will's been put in, it's just to stop the run. Him being a younger player, you know, going into his fifth year in the league, he understands a little bit more the importance of getting sacks and getting after the quarterback, and he makes emphasis on that by, you know, saying that's going to be one of my goals for 2017.
And then he obviously was able to play multiple different positions, like we're talking about. He's trying to develop it even more. But for people who don't know, what is it that is so challenging? You know, some people may think, oh, you know, defensive line, you can just move around.
Sure.
They don't appreciate the nuances of what that takes.
Yes.
So explain to us those nuances and why that is such a difficult thing to move outside and in.
I mean, outside and in is two different positions. Even though it's defensive line, like you said, Casey, you know, you have different jobs going outside and in. Outside, you're an edge setter, so you set the edge. You bring the runs and the passes back in for the inside. And inside, you're pushing the ball outside, in a sense, especially when on passing downs. So a guy like Will, who has the frame and the body to say, you know what, if I'm needed on the inside, I can play that position. You know, it's the terminology as well, the vocabulary. If he doesn't understand a certain term that Coach Smith is using on the inside, but he's playing inside, that can kind of be detrimental to his play and his, you know, starting fast and going slower. You know, and all in all, Will Golston is the type of player that, you know, at the end of the day, if he doesn't know anything else, he knows how to play hard. And half the time, that's the battle to get the guys to play hard.
I think that Will's probably the second potential free agent, potential loss that the Buccaneers managed to retain this year, the first being defensive coordinator Mike Smith, who really got some hard looks to be a head coach. And at some point, he just decided, this is where I want to be, at least for the next few years. How happy were you guys to hear that?
Man, we were very ecstatic. When Coach Smith came in here, he came in here with an attitude to spark the kind of, you know, ignite the flame. And he's been that spark since he's been in the building, implementing new principles that he wanted us to share and us to know as teammates, having fun, going out there and giving all you have, running hard, working to be focused and determined on your job to get it done right. Mm-hmm. And you kind of seen that pick up when we were on our 5-game win streak and the defense was kind of playing lights out there. You know, in any substance or anything that you do, any endeavor you do in life, you have to have endurance to do it. And, you know, we kind of got plagued with injuries a little bit early in the season. Roles kind of changed, defined a little bit different. And during the middle of the season as well, during those 5-game win streaks. But at the same time, you know, we seen fit to kind of finish off in a good fashion so far as beating the Carolina Panthers.
Right.
Somebody who's been in our division somewhat as the bully the last few years, as we're trying to step into that role, not as the bully, but the enforcer. We want to make the plays. We want to make things go in our favor this year. So we have to be focused and be determined. And starting off with a great defense coordinator, Mike Smith, is kind of key.
Yeah, and how do you make sure that that momentum continues this year when we know, obviously, that rosters do turn over a lot? We don't know exactly what the defense is going to look like yet. And you said that he brought in that spark, and there was such a huge evolution in what the defense did. I mean, it was almost like a different unit out there at the end of the year than the beginning in so many ways. How do you make sure that growth keeps happening when there might be some new pieces out there?
Well, you know, all in all, we have a saying that players play and coaches coach. So even though Coach Smith is doing an awesome job coaching and motivating the players along with the defensive staff, you got to have players who have heart and drive to do this as well. You know, you got to have players that say, you know what, I see what he's teaching me. I see what he's coaching me to do. Now I have to be resilient in my job to study film, to hit the weight room, to eat right, to drink right, to do things. These things are intangible that people don't see and recognize to allow me to get to the week on Sunday and say, you know what, I'm going to have a great impact on this game.
Before you go, I wanted to ask you about another guy in free agency. He's probably going to leave the team, Mike Glennon. I mean, it looks like he's going to get an opportunity to go somewhere and be a starter. How do you feel about him and getting a chance to do that? I mean, you know, because he had some chance to start, and then Jameis came in, and he's clearly the future of this team. But Mike's going to get a shot. How do you feel about that?
You know, I think every man deserves a shot. And I think Mike Glennon is a good man. He has a great family. And, you know, that's one thing that people don't often see so far as outside looking in. So far as the families that are involved, you know, the NFL is a family within itself with, you know, your wife, your kids. What kind of future do you want to leave for them? What kind of example do you want to be for your kids and your wife when it comes to things like this? This is a life-changing decision in every young man's life when he plays in the NFL. He knows at some point in time that he might make it to free agency. And for Mike Glennon, you know, between him and his agent and their strategy and whatever they're going to do, you know, I'm sure it's going to be the best one for them.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate the time. Good luck the rest of the offseason. Can't wait to see you back out on that field.
Thank you as much
as we appreciate you having me here, too. All right, well, that's going to do it for us on this segment. We got a couple more segments coming up on Buccaneers Insider Live, so don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here, and we just had Clint McDonald on. If you missed that, we'll be posting this all later online. You definitely will want to hear his thoughts on his entrance with the combine and free agency and what he thinks about Will Golston re-signing and just the team and the defense overall. He had some really great things to say.
And I'm glad Clinton's not on that list of free agents that we have to deal
Absolutely.
With right now.
Absolutely. Glad to keep him here.
Yeah, we got Will Golston back, which was huge, but Akeem Spence and a couple other defensive linemen are on there too. So, you know, like you were saying to Clinton, there's change in the team every year, and on any given unit, there's usually some change. So there'll be some new faces on the defensive line. But we'll, you know, with the, depending upon what happens with Akeem Spence, we'll get most of the players back that were the core of that lineup last year. And you saw how it really came on at the end of the year. And really, the sack totals by the end of the year were pretty good. I know they want them to be a little bit better, but, and it's not all about sacks. Some of it's about affecting the quarterback and the pressure and the secondary, the rush and the coverage working together. And we saw how well that was working for the second half of the season, as Clinton mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. And we always want to hear from you as well, get all of your thoughts, questions, opinions, all of that. You can send that in using hashtag Bucks Live. We'll get to that in the next segment. For right now, we wanted to kind of wrap up a little bit of the combine talk as we're heading into free agency. And in general, it's always interesting this time of year that all of those conversations sort of collide of the who the team needs in the draft. And,
right.
Well, there's free agency. Oh, but who's in the draft? But who's in free agency?
Yeah.
And we go back and forth.
Yeah.
We got a little bit of insight on that, I think.
From Pete Prisco of CBS Sports. I thought he made a very good point that even though chronologically free agency is going to come before the draft, considering the specific strengths of this draft and the fact that the draft in general is considered one of the deepest ones in years, and that's not just the media saying that. Our guys, you know, John Spytek and Jason Light, they're all saying the same thing, that this is a draft that is significantly deeper overall than probably they've seen in 4 or 5 years at least. And so when you're talking about a team that doesn't necessarily have the glaring holes in the depth chart that it's had in the last few years, it's a lot stronger overall, but there's still some pretty obvious needs. And I think they can look at the draft and say to themselves, I think we have a pretty good shot of getting that A, whether it be another edge rusher or more cornerback depth there. And that way they can sort of focus a little bit in free agency on what it will not be quite as easy to get in the draft. As an example, if you want, and I'm not saying the Buccaneers are looking for this, but if you wanted to add offensive line depth or a potential starter on offensive line, you probably want to address that in free agency, or at least try to, because there's actually a pretty good number of potential free agents for that could be offensive line starters that are going to hit the market, which doesn't always happen with good offensive tackles and guards. And so if you were trying to hit that, it would probably make sense to try to do that through free agency because that particular position is considered kind of weak in this draft.
And one of the few, that because they talk about how deep the draft is, it's one of the few that they don't believe that particular position is that deep.
Now, everybody, I think, agrees, and we can say this because, as we've noted several times, Dirk Cutter said right at the, after the end of the season that this offense needs some more explosive playmakers in it. So we're not, you know, we're not telling anybody something they don't already know. So I think, and we talked about it a little bit while we were at the Combine, I'm of the opinion that I'd love to see the team approach that issue the exact same way they approached cornerback and defensive end last year, which was hit it in free agency because you're not 100% sure what you're going to get in the draft. But if you get the opportunity to hit that need again in the draft, that, you know, like they did with Robert Ayers and Brent Grimes and then Vernon Hargraves and Noah Spence, and it worked.
And there is just no amount of too much depth at so many of those positions.
Yeah, especially cornerback.
Yeah, the last couple of years, it's incredible how the Bucs at some position just get hit with
last year was D-line, right?
Of injuries at one position. And you know there's going to be injuries, but for it to be so concentrated the way it's been, I think that Bucs fans probably now understand there is no idea of too much depth.
And that probably underscores the importance of what they were just doing at the Combine as part of their whole scouting process, because you think of guys that really helped us get through that time when about the entire defensive line was practically on the injured list, and you had Devontae Lambert and Channing Ward, guys like that stepping in, and those were undrafted free agents who really helped out and could be, you know, more important parts of the line. We'll see as the years go on, and you know, that's a big part of your scouting. It's beyond, you know, we were talking to John Spytek about how they their list of 120 that will probably most of our draft picks will come from that. But you got to go well beyond that. So as soon as that seventh round ends, you're on the phone trying to get those guys like Devontae Lambert, and it paid off.
And so when tomorrow comes around, free agency officially begins, which is going to be so fun for us because we can finally talk about specific people as compared to doing all of this,
you know, we're so worried about
player who shall not be named discussions. Just because the team potentially signs somebody to you will not necessarily mean, oh, well, now they're not going to address that in the draft. That I think they showed last year that that's not how you feel. Right. Like that really free agency and what happens may not tell us anything in some ways about what they may or may not do
well,
in the draft.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And I think what it does is it gives you more flexibility. So let's just talk about that one position they were talking about. We're not talking about a specific player here, but explosive playmakers. And that could be running backs, but I think we're largely talking about receivers here. Okay, there's a number of pretty intriguing options that are going to be free agents here in about 24 hours. If you get one of those, you're not quite so hostage to that concept in the draft. You know, it's not totally necessary to spend the 19th overall pick on it, or maybe your second round pick or whatever, but you still can. It just gives you more flexibility.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so for you, talking to some of the people about the draft and looking at the combine, was there anything that either the combine did because of the players who were there and how they performed, or just things you heard either from our guys or other analysts that you feel like you have a better handle on maybe the draft and how that could go?
Yeah, John Ross ran a 4.22.
That could do it. That's one of those things, which we may
not
sad
be a good thing, right?
Because now we're afraid that maybe, you know, come 19.
He may not be there.
Yeah. If only he'd done just a little bit
which
worse.
Is kind of funny when you think about it. And maybe that's more a construct of the media, the collective wisdom of mock drafts. Because really, was there a scout upstairs who thought John Ross was maybe worth the 19th pick when he had a 4.30 that he'd run, you know, a couple months before? But now they ran a 4.22.
Now he's
a top 15 guy. So some of that, I think, is a construct, and it becomes sort of a self-fulfilling cycle with all these mock drafts. So it's hard to say for sure, but there were some players who made themselves some money at that combine. You talk about that safety, and I don't think I can pronounce his last name, but it's from Connecticut. And his first name's Obi.
Obi, yeah. We're going to just call him Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Right. And he just tested off the charts and everything. I bet you, and I haven't looked yet, but I'd be willing to bet you're going to start seeing his name in all the first-round mock drafts now, where he wasn't
before. As much as people have downplayed the combine's significance in some ways of what that really means, I think that maybe Byron Jones going to the Cowboys after that jumping.
Same guy. I mean, Connecticut, right?
Yeah, I think that, well, first of all, Connecticut apparently knows how to train for the combine.
Yeah, right.
That maybe that's showing people there is something to those really incredible numbers that they made.
Yeah, or the Cowboys already really liked Byron Jones. And
also a possibility.
That just helped out.
That's always a chance as well. All right, we're going to come back for one more segment and get to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending those in using hashtag BucsLive, and we'll be right back after just a couple minutes.
Welcome back to Bucks Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. Time for our final segment, where we're going to get to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending those in throughout the segment. Use the hashtag BucksLive. Our first one will be our friendly reminder that we are still one day away from being able to talk about specific players. And believe me, we are so sorry. We wish we could.
Yeah, we can read your questions.
So we'll read the question, and we can't really answer it, I'm sure, the way we want. So Champ asks, what percent do you think we will get wide receiver DeSean Jackson?
Yeah, see, that's specifically the type of question we can't answer yet.
Yes,
because we're
talking about
a player. Are the Bucks interested in a player who's under contract with another team? And we can't really do that yet. But we can talk about the fact that there's been a lot of rumors about guys like DeSean Jackson and Alshon Jeffrey and the Bucks potentially having interest, because you can pretty much, we were just talking about it, you can connect the dots as to why that would be a good idea for the Buccaneers.
Yes.
Probably, you know, and I think we did see, you do see reports of, like, Pierre Garçon potentially getting $16 million from San Francisco. Now, this has to be just rumors because it can't really be an offer yet. But if you tend to put any stock in those, you're kind of seeing how the market's getting set. So that's something to keep an eye on. And, you know, it's funny because you had that one. I had one. Somebody asked me about Brian Quick.
Mm-hmm.
And the names everybody's hearing, and again, we're not saying whether the Buccaneers should go after them. The potential free agents that you would see on a lot of lists at receiver where they're ranked higher, like Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson and Kenny Stills. And you might, about five or six, see Brian Quick. You know, he doesn't quite have the same career numbers as some of those other guys. And the way the question was worded was, would the Bucks go after a sort of lower risk, potentially high reward type of player? So I can't really comment yet on Brian Quick specifically, but I do think that that is a good way to approach free agency. And I think you saw some of that last year. Now, you can't really say that Robert Ayers was a low risk guy. He's one of the defensive ends that a lot of teams wanted. But Josh Robinson is a good example. And that was adding depth at cornerback, and then he ended up being a very good player for us on special teams. And he's a free agent again, but if we could bring him back, then he still provides you with depth at corner, even though the Bucs didn't end up having to turn to him last year, and he made a big impact on special teams. And I think a lot of times you can do that. You can find good value, and it's usually not on day one. You're going to see a whole bunch of signings right away because this negotiating window makes that possible. And then, you know, the Buccaneers did most of their signings on the second and third day last year.
Yeah, and just that is a great reminder about looking at last year as the great example of, just because it's not a big splash or huge name, one of the top people everyone's talking about in free agency, mm-hmm. does not mean they're not going to be a huge contributor to this team. And like you said, in maybe a potentially more valuable way in terms of how much you spent to get them and their production.
It's a reward for what you paid for. And a good example of a few years ago was Lewis Murphy. And I know the end of his career here got a little derailed by injuries, but he was a guy that we signed probably about 3 or 4 weeks into free agency. If I recall correctly, I think it was around the end of March, beginning of April that year. And he ended up having, you know, when he was healthy and had an opportunity, he did a good job for the Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of depth that can really help you.
This question is from Doug, and he says, it is such a deep tight end draft. He says, George Kittle came out of nowhere, third fastest, and arguably that best blocker. Thoughts on taking a tight end early?
Yeah, I see that in a lot of mock drafts. And I've never been a huge fan of hitting that position in the first round. I just think there are some – you know, here's what it is. I think there are some positions where most of your eventual star guys are first rounders or high rounders, like defensive end, edge rusher, cornerback, quarterback. And I think there are other positions where it's not necessarily that case. Now, it is particularly hard to find one of those all-around tight ends that's the Bucs tried to do with a second-round pick on Austin Seferian Jenkins, a guy that can play all three downs, block, so he can run out on pass routes and catch passes, so you're really not giving away what you're going to do by putting a specific tight end with a certain skill set in there. That is hard to find, and I suppose if a guy that was almost a sure thing to fit that bill was available at 19, I could see it, but me personally, it wouldn't be my first choice of what to do with that pick.
Would it mean that you think the team would be using it in a two tight end set with Cameron Brate?
Yeah, right.
Or would you be thinking of this as...
That's another reason.
So do you think it would need to be a tight end that had a different skill set than Cam, theoretically, or just another weapon in the similar way that Cam
to go is? 19th overall, this guy has got to be a guy who's a three-down player. And then I think you bring up a good point. Are we minimizing what we might be able to get out of Cam, who's just coming off illegitimately. He was legitimately probably a top 10 tight end in the league. And now they're saying his blocking skills are developing and that will allow him to be on the field more on all three downs. And maybe with the potential of what you could still get out of Cam and the fact that you have a very good blocker in Luke Stocker, you don't really necessarily need to spend that first overall pick on a tight end. You can add to that position here and there and come up with a pretty good unit.
I'm totally asking this question just because of their name. Casey wants to know, how will the Bucs address the safety position this offseason? Do we re-sign Bradley and Conte or look towards free agency and or the draft?
Yeah, I think the safety position is the one that could go, of all the positions, that's the one that could conceivably go in so many different directions. You could just re-sign, or try to, and if they're amenable to it, your two, McDougal and Conte, and then you still have Keith Tandy. So you have a pretty good threesome of starters for two positions there. Or if neither of those guys come back, there are a number, again, we're not going to talk about specific names until next week, but there are a number of pretty good and proven safeties on the free agency landscape this year, and I think you could easily add in that direction. And then we were just talking about the even before this OB, whose last name I can't remember, from Connecticut, had such a great showing, there was already about three safeties who were showing up in first-round mocks. And I've been hearing from some of our guys here in the building that the safety position is becoming more important. I tended to think of it as something that wasn't a position you often spent a high pick on unless it was a transcendent player like an Eric Berry. And, you know, we've only done it once, ever spent a first-round pick on a safety, and that was Mark Barron. And, you know, in the long run, that didn't work out wonderfully for us. But I think maybe the safety position is gaining in terms of importance in the eyes of the talent evaluator. So that's another way the Buccaneers could go in the first round.
I like this question. We haven't gotten it yet. Dominic wants to know, what do you think the chances are that the Bucs are on Hard Knocks, and would you like that? And he says he's from England. So thanks for watching,
Dominic. I think the chances are reasonably up there. We're one of a pool of maybe seven or eight teams that can, because other teams can get out of it if they're in the playoffs in a certain number of years, or if they've been on it before, or if they have new head coaches. And so when you whittle away who is allowed to say no, you're usually down to about seven or eight teams. I know we're one of them. I know Cleveland is one of them. And a lot of people would like to see that, just because there's been a lot of turmoil with that franchise over the last few years. I personally would not be in favor of it, because I think our coaches and probably most coaches would prefer to be able to do what they want to do without that kind of distraction or potential distraction. I think every coach would like to play every single game at 1 o'clock on Sunday and have the exact same routine every week. I think they would like to not have to deal with outside distractions going into their schedule. But you know, maybe players and others feel different, you know, maybe they feel differently, but I wouldn't be in favor of it.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of fans are very in favor, and a lot of people in this building may want.
The exposure would be nice.
That's true. That's a great point. All right, well, thanks for being with us on this edition of Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Enjoy the chaos of free agency that will begin tomorrow, and we will see you next year, next week, to be able to talk about all that, and we'll finally be able to talk about all those players. Have a great rest of your week.